I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Later in the program, the U.S. Open starts today with a tribute to tennis great Althea Gibson, the first African-American to win the Open. We'll talk with two rising stars of the game about how much has changed, and we'll talk about Attorney General Albedo Gonzalez. But first, the question of Iraq continues to dominate American politics. For years, critics of the Iraq War have been invoking the lessons of Vietnam, arguing that the war is ill-considered and futile. President Bush and his allies have always resisted the comparison, until now. In a speech last week at the Veterans of Foreign Wars National Convention, President Bush himself made the comparison to warn of the consequences of leaving the battle too soon.
One unmistakable legacy of Vietnam is that the price of America's withdrawal was paid by millions of innocent citizens whose agonies would add to our vocabulary new terms like boat people, re-education camps, and killing fields.
The speech drew a strong reaction from pundits and other political leaders, but we wanted to know how veterans, people who fought in each of those wars, felt about the president's comparison. With us is George Ottobee. He served two tours in Vietnam as a Marine. He joins us from KCFR, Colorado Public Radio. And Paul Rykoff, he is an Army veteran who served a tour in Iraq and is the executive director of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. He joins us from his office in New York. And I welcome both of you gentlemen, and thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate it.
Mr. Ottobee, if you would start, your reaction when you heard the president's remarks.
Well, I was really astounded that they would even use the correlation of Vietnam and Iraq. I didn't think the Republicans, especially the president, would use that type of the terminology, because the only thing between Iraq and Vietnam, the only similarities I've seen is that we were lied to as American citizens in regards to, like, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. We found out there was really no attack on any American ships, and yet we were in the combat. And the same thing here. We were looking for weapons of mass destruction, and there aren't any. And here we are in the middle of a war, watching our people getting wasted for no reason at all. So
you see deception as an analogy.
Comparisons is just beyond my comprehension.
Mr. Rykoff?
Well, I think it's a pretty weak comparison and surprising in general, because the president has refused comparisons between Iraq and Vietnam for so long. And I think it's a sign of really desperate times. The president is really reaching and trying to rally support behind a controversial war, and someone's told him this is going to be a smart strategy. I disagree. And I think there's another piece here that's missing. We talk a lot about the legacy of Vietnam, and we need to remember what happens when a nation fails to care for its veterans after a war, like in Vietnam. And I found it ironic that as the president spoke to the largest gathering of veterans in America at the VFW convention, he didn't mention any of the key issues facing veterans, like the fact that the Secretary of the VA, Jim Nicholson, has recently announced his resignation and no replacement has been named. And the president didn't talk at all about Walter Reed or the Dole Shalala Commission that was stood up to fix the problems after Walter Reed. I found it almost insulting that at this huge gathering of veterans, he didn't talk much at all about veterans' issues and instead used the VFW and used veterans kind of as a political prop or a backdrop for his rhetoric on the war.
But it does sound to me that each of you sees a comparison, just not one that you find favorable to the president's case. Is that right?
Oh, yes. That's what I would say.
Mr. Ottobee, what about the substance of his comment that once American troops left Vietnam, those who remained in Vietnam, including people who helped U.S. troops, were left to face awful consequences? Is there any validity to that? Because it seems that that's already the case in Iraq, that those who are associated with the Americans in any way, I mean, housekeepers, certainly the police, anybody who's training with U.S. forces, anybody who works with U.S. forces is targeted. Even there was a truck bombing in a town in northern Iraq in the last couple of weeks for people who are just deemed sympathetic to the Americans for whatever reason, sort of targeted. Isn't that already the case? Is there not validity to that argument?
Well, the only thing I could say in regards to that is that had we not been there in the first place and destabled the government there, none of this would be happening. Because of our actions, because of us going in there based on information that was really not sound, now we're having to suffer all the consequences. And these are just symptoms of the bigger problem of us thinking we can dominate the world and tell people what to do, when in fact the reality is they have to dictate their own reality, and they have to live with what that reality is.
Mr. Rykov, what about the argument that we were just talking about, that U.S. troops are the only thing keeping the country from total chaos?
I think there's some validity to that. I've been there myself, and I think we do have to worry about an imploding situation and a genocide if we pull out. But I don't think anybody is really sensibly trying to promote a quick, precipitous withdrawal. A lot of the plans on the table are over time and leaving some sort of a residual force behind to maintain some degree of order. My question for President Bush is, well, what is he suggesting? That we didn't fight hard enough or stay long enough in Vietnam? And I think that's really nonsense. It's a distortion. We've been in Iraq longer than we were in World War II. And Vietnam was not sectarian groups fighting each other. It was a very different situation. So my question is, what is his point, that we should have stayed in Vietnam? What is the end result here?
Mr. Atterby, did you hear it that way also? Did you hear the president's remarks as in some way indicting the war effort in Vietnam, that we didn't fight hard enough and long enough there? Is that how it felt to you?
Yeah, I agree with Paul. He hit it right on the head, is that there was no victory. There would never be a victory in Vietnam. In fact, we would still be fighting there had we not pulled out, and the Vietnamese were not going to give up their right for their self-determination.
What lessons, Mr. Atterby, do you feel the U.S. should learn from the Vietnam War, which apply to the war in Iraq?
Yeah. Well, basically, the first thing is you don't go into other nations and other countries trying to dictate what your reality is. And that attitude is what's caused us so many problems internationally, not only just in the Middle East, but in Central America, South America. It's the attitude we have, and we have to overcome that attitude with the leaders that we have now and get new leadership that are knowledgeable on how to do negotiation instead of sending in troops. Is how do we communicate with our enemies and so where we are able to be proactive instead of reactive.
And you don't buy the president's argument that there's a threat to the United States, a threat to U.S. interests, which can best be resolved by the
conflict. Yeah, it was like if the Vietnamese were going to get in boats and come over to the United States and invade us, that was preposterous. No way that was going to ever happen, and everybody knew that.
Paul, you had talked earlier about the fact that you feel that the president's comments didn't address the larger issues facing Iraq veterans today. Talk a little bit more about that, if you would.
Well, I think the key one being that, you know, Secretary Nicholson has recently announced his resignation after a terrible tenure, including the Walter Reed fiasco.
And I'm sorry, forgive me, for those who don't know, Walter Reed Army Medical Center is a major medical facility for Army active duty and veterans in Washington, D.C., and it was at the center of a scandal about the quality of care there, just to remind people who aren't aware.
Right, and arguably it's probably gotten more attention than any other veterans issue in the last 25 years, so this was a huge issue for the veterans of this generation, kind of like our Hurricane Katrina moment where the American public sort of woke up and recognized that the country wasn't ready to receive this new generation of veterans. And they're facing huge challenges. We've had 1.8 million veterans who've been through Iraq and Afghanistan, and right now at the VA there are 378,000 waiting disability claims. 83,000 of those claims have been waiting for 6 months or longer. Over 25,000 troops have been wounded. One in three coming home have mental health issues like post-traumatic stress disorder and depression. And the president doesn't talk about these issues. Even when he's standing in front of the largest gathering of veterans in America at the VFW convention, he doesn't address these pressing needs facing veterans. And I think it's a real problem. We need leadership on veterans issues. We need to know how the problems of Walter Reed are going to be fixed. And we need to know who's going to be the new Secretary of the VA. It's a cabinet-level position, and a replacement has not been named. So I think it shows you where veterans' issues place on the priority list for this president and this administration.
Okay, but Mr. Rykov, did you go to the speech yourself? Were you there? I know members of your organization were somewhere. Well, he seemed to be very warmly received there. He got a lot of applause, sustained applause. Do you think that this is generational, that perhaps veterans of a different generation were more receptive, or to what do you account for the fact that you and Mr. Atterby seemed very critical, but other people in the room didn't seem to be?
Well, the president generally doesn't speak to too many crowds that are confrontational. I think that's been a pattern throughout this administration. But the VFW, in general, has been definitely a conservative-leaning organization. They've had problems within their own membership because of their position to vote to support the war. And I think in many ways it's compromised their ability to be effective on veterans' issues. The VFW, I would argue, like many other military groups in this country, have been used by the administration kind of as a political chew toy, as wallpaper to provide an incredibly powerful photo op. The president can make a very compelling case behind a supportive audience of people wearing uniforms, and it really plays well on national TV, and I think he's going to continue to do that.
Okay, strong words there, and I think at some point it would be important for us to hear from the administration on these points, which we will do, which we will endeavor to do at some point. But, Mr. Otterby, just a final thought from you. You do consulting for veterans groups with regard to post-traumatic stress disorder. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, I work with the American GI Forum, and we're looking for the impact that's going to be happening right now to many of these soldiers with doing 2 and 3 tours and extending their tours to 18 months.
I just think a lot of Americans who are listening to us might like to know what they can do to support the troops when they do come home.
The first thing you do is if you see the individual withdrawing or reacting to gunfire and stuff like that, is you try to get them counseling, you try to get them stabilized, because a lot of this stuff, it's for some of them doesn't hit for a little later on in their life. But your second war is trying to get your disability. After you've come back from combat and you're in the battlefield, you think that you're going to be treated fairly well when you come back, and you end up finding out that nobody wants to talk about it, nobody wants to deal with it, and your battle to get your veterans' benefits is your second battle, and you can't go in there by yourself. You have to have help. To take on the system, if you don't know how to do it correctly, you get disenfranchised from it, and you don't pursue those rights that you have. Uh-huh. And helping these veterans to come back is, I think, an obligation this country has to its veterans, and even though the war itself, I deem it to be illegal, we have the responsibility to support those veterans and make sure that they get their rights and benefits coming to them.
All right, and thank you. And as I said, there are a number of views on this, and we hope to hear more of them as we go forward. I thank both of you gentlemen for speaking with us. George Otterby, Vietnam War veteran, joined us from Colorado Public Radio at KCFR-FM in Centennial, Colorado. Paul Rykoff is the author of Chasing Ghosts and the executive director of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. He joined us from New York. Gentlemen, if I may thank you both for your service.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
And I'd like
to thank
you both for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.